Hi, Newstalk's Ciara Kelly here. Summer always feels like a fresh start, and for a lot of us, that fresh start begins at home. Ideas start bubbling away. Maybe it's a new bathroom, a new kitchen, or a bigger renovation. But this is the moment when it all really starts to take shape. If you're thinking ahead, Tile Style is the place to begin. Tile Style has an incredible range of tiles, flooring, and finishes, and they make the planning side far easier too. Their team can help you visualize your space with customized virtual designs for kitchens and bathrooms so you can feel confident about your choices long before any work begins. And it's a great time to start planning because the Tile Style Summer Sale is now on with 40% off all tiles in stock and incredible reductions on wood flooring, bathrooms and fitted kitchens too. It's a brilliant opportunity to get inspired, make decisions early and take advantage of real savings while you're at it.
Moncrief on News Talk.
In this part of Europe, there are many places where the people identify their heritage as Celtic. Among them, Cornwall. It has its own language and distinct culture, and for some decades, a Cornish independence movement has existed. In the last decade or so, the amount of people who regard themselves as primarily Cornish has doubled to around 100,000. So could this spur the possibility of Cornish devolution? Joni Willett is an Associate Professor of Politics at the University of Exeter. Good afternoon, Joni.
Dear Deet, how are you doing?
So in the last decade or so, the amount of people identifying as Cornish has doubled. What has prompted that, do you think?
Oh, gosh, so many things. I think about it. It's about growing confidence. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story. And this one, and during that time, I knew that there was a Cornish language. I knew that Cornwall had distinct culturally, et cetera, and there's a flag and all this kind of stuff. But genuinely, I thought that the flag was black and gold. It's not, it's black and white. But my point is that you could grow up during that time and know that there was a special identity, but not understand the range of symbolisms surrounding it. And a massive part of that is because, and I think probably this would be quite familiar, or this kind of process would be familiar to people in Ireland too, is that, you know, if you identified as being a bit Cornish, that was a bit weird and you're a bit backward and a bit stupid and, you know, come on, dudes, join the 21st century kind of thing. Hmm. So, you know, so there wasn't a lot that, you know, so that, there was a barrier for people to start to identify as Cornish. And then in the 1990s, what happened was there all kinds of complicated reasons, which I can go into in a bit if you'd like, but it's surrounding like economics and governance and the EU and versus Westminster and stuff, the EU on the side of the Cornish, well, much more accepting about identity than Westminster was. But you know, a whole bunch of stuff happened in the 1990s that meant that by the year 2000, Cornish identity, rather than being seen as like being a bit weird and a bit backward and a bit like you don't really want to do that, was actually seen as something to be proud of and that was part of our route to the future, and our cultural heritage was amazing. And that just set off this whole chain of confidence growing that meant that we can get to the point now where more people are, I mean, Cornish is recognised as only one of two languages globally that have been officially recognised to be revived. There's a whole debate about whether the Cornish language actually was extinct in the first place, but well, let's park that for a moment. But the point is that, yeah, you're absolutely right. There is so much pride in being Cornish right now that it means that, you know, your casual visitors to Cornwall can come here, move around this place and know, A, that Cornwall is different, and B, have a sense about some of the symbols that we use to spread that difference or that attach to that cultural difference.
Yeah. Now, of course, there's a difference, I suppose, between I'm proud of my heritage, I want to speak my language and explore my culture. There's a difference between that and I'd prefer my area to self-govern to a certain extent. Within the politics of that, within Cornwall, what's generally wanted?
Okay, so maybe I'm going to start journey I was telling you around about in the 1990s, it ended up in 2001 with a massive, like really a major pre-widespread internet a petition calling for a Cornish Assembly, calling for devolution for Cornwall. That was hugely supported right the way through Cornwall. Support for independence, less so. So if you were to do a little bit of a vox pop on the streets today, you would get a lot of people saying, yes, we need more autonomy. We need more self-determination. We need to be able to create our own laws, you know, for a whole range of different things. But they would also say, you know, but you would be quite hard pushed to find somebody, you know, a casual member of the public saying we want independence. You know, we're totally not at that spot yet. What we've found here in Cornwall over decades now, I think we're talking about probably since the 1960s, there's been a gradual but really wholesale shift of power and decision-making control about local areas from localities towards the government in Westminster. What that has meant practically is that localities can't really do very much or don't really have that much say about what happens in our areas or how to address local needs, and instead our council's upper tier authority, Cornwall Council, has to deliver central policy or decide how to deliver central policy rather than deciding that policy for ourselves. That is a real problem for us, and we could talk about housing policy as a part of that. So, for example, we have a massive housing crisis in Cornwall. We've got 30,000 people on the emergency housing register, and this out of a population of just over 500,000. So, you know, a significant proportion. And yet we have an enormous number of empty dwellings. So
similar issues here in Ireland as well, actually, or at least in parts of Ireland, yes.
Yeah, and actually, this is something that you hear in the United States. You hear about it in Spain, in Germany. It is like this is a real phenomenon. And the big problem is that people think that housing is a place to park their spare cash. It's a nice little nest egg, etc., etc. If your house is your investment rather than your place to live, you're wanting to leverage your investment. If you're wanting to leverage your investment, you're wanting to rent to the short-term letting sector rather than long-term. And so we have this massive problem where we've got a lot of houses where people have to, you know, can't live, and instead people are living in hotel rooms because that's the only place they can be. But we can't do anything about that locally. There are policy tools that are being used in lots of other parts of the world to regulate Airbnb. We can't do it here in Cornwall because it's not within the competency of the local council. It's something that has to be decided at a Westminster level, and you know it takes years for those kind of things to go through, and there's no sign of it yet.
Yeah. So, now, in terms of the attitude of Westminster towards all this, as I understand that there might be a proposal on the table for some degree of devolution, but for some reason they're lumping you in with Devon. What do Devon and Cornwall have in common other than they're beside each other?
Yeah, they're next to each other. At a central government level, they've decided that devolution needs to be about combined authorities. Now, this isn't about whether there is a reason and rationale for a combined authority. Instead, it's saying that you just need to, that devolution needs to go to them. In Cornwall, we're a peninsula, right? So from one side of Cornwall to the other, it's going to take you an hour and a half to drive, even though maybe our population doesn't reflect that kind of distance, which then means that actually it is, and you know, from one side of Cornwall to the other side of Devon, or even to the middle of Devon, the kind of like administrative centre of Devon, that takes like 2.5 hours. That is no size for a devolved unit at all. But it's really, really difficult to get central government to appreciate this. And I know that our members of parliament, our Cornish members of parliament, have been having these conversations ever since they were elected in the summer, trying really hard to make people with the centre understand that Cornwall is different. We are culturally distinct. We have our own unique heritage. And so, therefore, we need to be treated as a special case. This is a very difficult argument for them to make. It's proving harder than it should be.
Oh, dear. Even though every MP in Cornwall would be in favour of this, would that be the case?
But even though every MP in Cornwall is calling for devolution for Cornwall only rather than Cornwall and Devon, it is very, very difficult for them to make that case at a Westminster level. And I know that they are fighting really hard for that.
Well, let's see, does it get any easier for them? Joni, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That was Joni Willett there. An Associate Professor of Politics at the University of Exeter. Obviously, first on the list for those MPs will be to improve the mobile phone signal there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.